I will now start recording on cassette number 4, side A, continuing copying the woolen sack tapes where we just left off.
Completely made up and ready to go. An armistice came November 11th, 1918, so we didn't get to go over. I was in, had the flu for about 30 days. Took down with the flu and was in the hospital there. Couldn't ride home or anything. Did they notify you that I was sick? They did. Well, they used to put a bottle of whiskey on a glass of whiskey on my table every day, and I wouldn't drink it, and they'd have to take it away.
And put that for all people that carry people.
So the nurse one day said, well, that's another drink for me. I don't know if she was getting it every day or not, but this one day she said, that's another drink for me. So I know she liked her drinks. Well, when I got to feeling better, I thought, well, I'll write a letter home. Write a letter to Florence. I got to put my elbow on the table and got my pencil in the hand to write, and boy, that was all for that day.
The flu, yeah,
I was just completely exhausted just from that little exertion. I had to lay down all the rest of it that day. And then I think the next day I was able to write a letter. The first try I couldn't do it. Unexhausted.
What part of Washington was Camp Lewis in? Was it near any of the big cities?
Camp Lewis is near Tacoma. Mm-hmm. No, they used to go up there to Tacoma on weekends, but I never did go up there. Mm-hmm. I stayed in camp. Mm-hmm. One day I failed to look at the bulletin board and I was called to go on KP. Well, of course, not looking on the bulletin board, I didn't know it. And we were out on the drill field doing our calisthenics, our ups and downs, you know. And here come a guy up from headquarters with a rifle on his shoulder. Took me back to camp. So, took me back to camp and had to finish out on KP. That was... I wasn't satisfied with that for not looking on the bulletin board. I had KP the next day. Yeah. I didn't know what to make of that. Well, I used to take a man to take him to his meals who was an objector. Conscientious objector. He says that the Bible says thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't fight. So I took this man to his meal from his barracks where they kept him to his meals every day for a couple of weeks.
Did they keep him locked up or what?
No, he wasn't locked up. I don't know why they probably had him working or something.
Why did you have to take him to his meals?
I don't know. I thought he needed to be guarded. He was very... I don't think he would have needed to be guarded.
Mm-hmm.
Just his convictions. One day I went after him and the captain, another officer, was talking to him and the captain slapped him in the face, Gus, slapped him both cheeks. Gus, I don't think you should be doing that. That's awful cruel. And when I'd take him down, well, the guys would razz him, you know, guys in the mess hall. And I think if they'd have taught him proper, given an understanding that it wasn't wrong to kill when people were come against you, you know, take your rights and your liberties away from you. I believe if they'd have taught him those things, well, he'd understood. I don't know if they taught him anything or not. I didn't have time to tell him anything. He had to march ahead of me. Couldn't march alongside of me. He had to be ahead of me and be behind him, the gun on my shoulder, without any bullets in it.
How did you find the Army life? Was it hard on you, or you were pretty strong physically, weren't you?
Yes, I could go along all right with it. I can go through all the radios. Yeah. And I was always pretty well physically strong. You've got to be strong if you got to live in the transfer business. And some heavy lifting. I know generally I used to have to get on the up the bottom of the piano going up
upstairs. You were on the bottom end. Huh?
They went upstairs, I had to get on the bottom end of it.
Not a man built strong enough to do that nowadays, Dad. they'd use a winch or something.
Yeah, they'd use something else besides the physical part of it. They do things with machines nowadays. They lift it up through the window or some way to get it up there. And remember, I took the piano up over Smith's Business College one time. And all the stairs were winding.
Spiral staircase?
Yeah. And sharp curves. Man, it was a tough job getting that piano up there.
Were you on the bottom end?
Yeah, I was on the bottom end of it.
Well, how many guys would there be on a piano to take one up?
Just two.
Just two?
Just two, I mean, that's all.
Why? What would a piano weigh?
Oh, I guess it weighed 600 or 700 pounds. Upright pianos are sure heavy.
You could win a weightlifting contest. Well,
they can make a piano today, you know, just as good as them uprights. Weighs half as much, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And spinets, I guess that's all they make nowadays, isn't it? Just about.
Just about. Well, certainly, most of the pianos they sell are certainly small like that.
They're just as good as the big ones. They have trouble in the piano tipping. You know, all the weight is right in the back of the piano.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's no weight on the front of it at all.
Uh-huh.
It's all in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Hard job to keep tipping over. So these spinets, these small ones, they're not so tall, there's no trouble, wouldn't have any trouble at all to handle them.
Well, now you were quite familiar with these Jewish businessmen on 25th Street in those days, weren't you?
Yes, but they didn't want to talk religion, they were very friendly with us. We done all their hauling on them. All merchants on 25th Street, we done all their transfer work for them.
Uh-huh.
Along with him very well. I had one Jew talk to me one day. He was going with me to get some freight. And he talked to me about the virgin birth of Christ. And I told him all about it. And his birth by Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I just talked to him for a few minutes. He says, well, he says, that's all right, but I can't talk to you anymore. I can't talk to you anymore. So I told him that Jesus Christ was divine, that he was the Son of God. He was the only begotten of the Father in the flesh. He said, well, that's all right, that's all right. I can't talk to you anymore. So I guess he was kind of sorry that he'd asked me any questions, the way he acted about it.
How did these Jewish businessmen get on 25th Street? What drew them to Ogden?
They generally worked in, as a rule, a small one-man business store, one-man business that way. They come along those streets, and you find them in most every town.
When did they come to Ogden? At the time of the railroad?
Yes, they came in with the railroads. But they open all hours, and they're open on Sundays, and they're open late evenings. Practically open all the time. They live right in the rear of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the Jews that are big businessmen.
Yeah.
And you find them in R.L. Samuels. That must be a Jewish establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do a wonderful business, and their establishments are really up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the best of fixtures and everything. I don't know about Bon Marché. I don't know the Jews in that or not.
You used to imitate, seems to me, when I was a kid, or you did on occasion, some of these Jewish, the way they would talk and fit you with a suit or something. Do you remember how that goes?
Oh, yeah, then put a suit on a man and then button it up in front and then draw it in the back with their fingers. Say, oh, it fits you just like the paper on the wall. So they have a way about them and selling. They're very good salesmen. Tell you a story about a 25th Street Jew. A man went into the store to buy a coat. And this fellow was a tramp. He didn't intend to pay for it. And the looking glass was up in the front of the store. So he told him to go and take a look at himself in the glass, see how the coat, how he liked the coat and how it fit him. So instead of stopping to look at himself in the glass, well, he went right on out the door. And the Jew said, went outside, he says, police, police, police. He says, shoot that man in the pants. He says, the coat is mine.
Seems to me at a ward reunion or a ward party once that you put on a little act or something, little Jewish businessman's act. Do you remember that out at Lawrence Park Park?
Oh, yeah. I remember now. Had a play there. 18th Ward, wasn't it?
Think so.
I don't remember. Gosh, it's been so long, I've forgotten all about it. Well, I didn't tell you about my railroad experience when the war came on. After the war, then I went railroading again.
Which war are we talking about?
I said after the war, didn't I?
World War
what? World War II. During World War II, I went to work, and before, I went to work at the Ogden Arsenal. They had closed it down. They built it in 1921. They had closed it down, they just opened it up again. And I went to work there as a hostler. And that was 1936. That was during the WPA days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on firing and fired there until 1940 when I went over to Hill Field and went on there as a brakeman. Then they wanted me to go on firing at the Arsenal again. I went back firing there and then I got on as an engineer on the Arsenal Railroad. Worked on the Arsenal Railroad till December 1945 when they cut down from 14 engines to 2 engines.
Mm-hmm.
I got laid off. I thought I was sitting pretty there till the time I retired. In December 1945, I got laid off from the railroad. And then February the 6th, 1946, I went to work at the Utah General Depot in the labor pool,
mm-hmm.
loading and unloading cars. When I got off the engine, the Arsenal, I weighed 145 pounds, started to work out there at the labor pool, loading and unloading cars at the Utah General Depot, and went down from 145 pounds to 120.
Hard work.
Yeah. And took sick. I was sick in bed for a couple of weeks.
Hmm.
Then the labor pool sent me to work at Warehouse 6, I think it was the name of the warehouse. Anyhow, it was for the engineers. So they kept me there, and I never did have to report back at the labor pool.
Mm-hmm.
They kept me right there. I registered in there morning and night on the time clock, and had me taking examination for a packer. So they sent for me, and personnel, I guess it was, personnel office, said, well, you passed the examination as a packer, okay. You passed the examination. fine, but in order to put you on regular, as a regular packer, we'll have to reduce your pay to 91 cents an hour, I think it was. I says, no, I'm able to do the work, and I don't think that I should be required to start in at a reduction in pay. I said, no, I don't want to go on regular. Just let me stay there. So in about 90 days, I took another examination, and they put me on permanent role. So I was on permanent from that time on until I left in March 1954 when I retired. I hurt my back from lifting, and I said that it was desirable to retire me. I was 67 years old then. So I've been retired, this is 59, I've been retired 5 years now from Utah General Depot.
What did you work at after you got back from Camp Lewis up until 1945?
Oh, I worked to 1924 for Dad, and then I went to try the insurance business for a year.
Metropolitan
Insurance, and I couldn't make a living with that. And then I went to work for the, what dairy was it? Nelson Rich Dairy. And then they sold out, worked for Cloverleaf Dairy, and then they sold out for Sunfreeze, Arden's Ice Cream. That's called the Meadow Gold Dairy now. Meadow Gold Products. And from there I went to the Arsenal.
Well, let's see, we went to the farm there. Were you working?
I was working for... Was I working for Dad? No, I was working for the dairy at that time. I was working for the dairy when we moved. When we moved to the farm.
That was about Depression time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was 1927. We were there from 1937 to 1934.
Let's see, we moved...
1927.
We moved to the farm, what time of the year in 1927?
September 1927.
Just in time to get in school, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
And then in 1934?
We moved to 30th Street.
Now, what time of the year was that? That was winter, wasn't it? Or was it?
No, it was good weather when we moved in there. Summertime, at least.
Was it summertime?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me I can remember burning tires or wood or something as kids while you went in with that old Ford panel truck that you had to run with a choke out or it wouldn't run.
That's the one we got off of
Bingham.
Yeah, well, Bingham.
Del Bingham.
And he didn't have title to it when he sold it to me.
He doesn't.
No. I had to get the title fixed up after we got back here. Got to move over on 30th Street.
What automobiles did you have during your life there after you got married? What was the first one that you got?
Model T.
What year did you get that?
Oh, I got that in 1925, I guess.
Did we have one of those when you moved to the farm?
Yeah, we did for a while. And,
was it the same one, that original?
No, it went all, it broke on us, broke down on us, and we got that one from Bingham.
We got the one from Bingham out on the farm?
Yes, when we were out there.
Then I don't ever remember your owning a car when we were back in town again.
No, didn't own a car then. Didn't own a car after that one.
In fact, I don't remember you ever owning one again while I was at home.
No, I didn't. You don't have a car while you were home. You got a car at 1941 Dodge, or not Dodge, but Ford, when we went to 1948, when we went back to, where was it? To Delbridge. We went to Delbridge first, didn't we?
Yeah.
1949, then we went to your place in New York.
Yeah.
Well, we used Delbridge Chevy to go back to Virginia, and we had our 1941 Ford to go to New York.
Mm-hmm. What Model T did you have that you used to let us kids drive when we were only about 10 or 11 or 12 years old? When I ran over my brother Donald's knee, do you remember that?
Yeah, that was the one that we had when we lived on 15th and Jefferson.
That
was that old thing we bought off the Ford. Was that a four-seater? Without a top?
No, it had a top on it.
Did it?
It had a cross top.
Now, I remember Dad told me that if the brake didn't work very good, you could push it in reverse and low and make it slow down.
Push it in reverse, not low. Push it in reverse.
And anyway, I was pushing in low and it kept on going, and just as Donald ran out in front of the car, I think I ran over his knee, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Mom came out and I think she bawled Dad out for letting us kids drive the car. I don't think I got bawled out. Now, remember, Dad used to let us drive it to church, too.
I think he was the only one who drove it. I don't think Gene did.
Just me. Mm-hmm. I can remember stopping one time. I really felt like a big shot. Stopping on the way to church and picking up some of those girls like Blanche Slater and Lorraine Ritchie and Fonda Stanger. Driving them to church in that car.
I put the cemetery in Memorial Day. We had North Carolina.
Betty Ann Hall?
Yes.
What's her name nowadays?
Don Burt. She married.
They think the Hall Cemetery lot belongs to them, I guess. And Dad and I was showing her where we were going to be married.
She thinks she's the only granddaughter of Grandpa Hall.
Oh?
And she's the only one.
He's a son. And Sam is a son. She's the grandchild. She seems to think that anything that was done on Grandpa Hall's church just to get some living, you know.
She was the only one that got any help from her grandpa. He took care of her in sickness. Care of her when she had an operation for appendicitis, paid for it. Took care of her after mother died, raised her. Father practically deserted her after that, didn't he?
But he was showing
her
where we were to be buried. We kept us the payments every year since they died. 7 or 15 years ago, we had to keep on it.
This is where my grandpa and grandma Hall is buried?
That's right.
And
we
kept that old estate lot where my parents were buried, that $15 a year, and we used to have the old estate, but that made it hard to find.
Boy.
But we got to take some care on that from the family. But we let Betty understand that that's our lot, and we're going to
be buried. She said that her children were the only ones that know where that lot is.
They come up here and be found. My other grandchildren know we didn't know where to bury. That's
just
my
authority to do it. I used to know. It's been an awful long time since I've been up there.
But you did know.
I used to know, yeah.
It's one of the best locations in the cemetery.
Is it?
Yeah. Beautiful spot up there. Jim Martin, if I get a job watering up there this summer, sprinkling. He'd give me a job and couldn't hire me. And they don't push me, personnel management. And he said that he's not allowed to hire anybody over 70 years old.
Hmm.
For any job.
Yeah, just like you told him you were 21 to get that fireman job when you were 19.
Yeah.
Now you can tell him that you're only 56. Or you're only 65.
When I was going to take a job Friday, and I said to the roundhouse foreman, well, if you've got to be 21, I said, how am I going to get the job? He says, all you got to do is say you're 2 years older than you are.
Now, let's hear something about your church work, Dad. We haven't heard any of that yet. And Mom's, too.
Well, I've been...
Why don't you come and sit over here, Mom? We're not getting you in on this. I do not. Come in here.
Can't hear you. You're too far away.
Move a little closer, Dad.
The first home mission I was on, we lived in Ogden State.
We lived in the 7th Ward?
Lived in the 7th Ward. I was on a home mission for 6 months. And the next home mission I was on was in the North Weber State, Marriott.
What are the years here? What was the first mission?
First home mission was 1925, I believe.
Who was your companion? I remember that.
Brother Johnson. I don't know what his first name was. He's the father of Dr.
Rich Johnson.
Rich Johnson. Yes, he's the father of Dr. Rich Johnson.
I didn't know that. Rich Johnson's father,
is your companion. 1927, in the Marriott Ward, I was on a 3 months home mission there, and Brother Stoddard was my companion. And I was on a home mission in the Mount Ogden State. We lived in the 18th Ward. I was on that mission for a couple of years.
Who is?
What years?
I had different companions. I had, I don't know, 50 years. I had Leo Hirsch with me. One time, other companions, I can't remember. I do remember Leo Hirsch. Maybe he was with me most of the time.
And I don't know what years
was it? That was shortly after we moved in here. We moved here in 34. It must have been about 35.
Mm-hmm.
And I've served as ward teacher ever since I joined the church. I was put at ward teaching. And I've worked in the mutual, in the 7th Ward, worked in the mutual for a time.
What kind of a job?
Oh, I was to bring in members. I used to visit the young people and try to get them to come out to mutual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they called me. I don't know whether I got anybody in or not, but that was a considerable time. I didn't have any other jobs besides that in the 7th Ward. I was ordained to the office of 70 while I was in the 7th Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop Budge came to me and says, how would you like to be a 70 in the hall? I started making a lot of excuses. And I wasn't worthy one thing or another. He says, well, do you want to be a 70?
Or don't you?
I couldn't get the words out of my mouth fast enough. I said, yes, I do. Bishop, yes, I do. So, I was... let's see, who was it? It was Levi Young, ordained in the 70s.
And then we moved from there out to Marriott.
Yeah, then we moved
out there.
We moved from there out to Marriott. And I was a teacher in the Sunday school, in the gospel doctrine class. Sunday school there, I had the Boy Scouts. I mean, you remember when I took you boys to Ben Lomond Peak one summer?
Yes, I didn't know you were in the Scouts.
Yeah, I was in the Scouts then. Took you and Gene and some of the other Marriott boys.
My only trip up Ben Lomond.
Took you right up, and we slept right up on the rocks that night, right on the peak.
That's right.
Couldn't find a level place to put our beds. There's so many rocks up there.
Gene and I carried great big packs all the way up Ben Lomond, and some of these big guys, I don't remember which one, Stanger, Ricky, or somebody, they just had a slim old blanket thrown over their shoulders, you know. And then after we'd lug these things, we two little kids, all the way to the top. And these guys wanted one of our blankets because they didn't have very much and it was going to get awfully cold.
I gave a talk to the Boy Scouts one evening, and it must have been an inspirational talk. So there was a brother there from the state, MIA, you know, and he commended me for my talk to the boys. And he says, "Are you a teacher?" I said, "No, I'm not a teacher." I said, "I thought I was a school teacher, you know."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I only had a seventh grade education." He says, "Well," he says, "that talk of yours," he says, "I thought you was an educated man."
He just said, "I am, but I didn't get it in school."
So when we talk to inspiration, I guess we do talk that has strength, power of language, and one thing or another. You take the scriptures, for instance, it seems to be the words you